In order to support our show, we'll need the help of some great advertisers. And in order to find great advertisers, we'll need to learn a little bit more about you. So please go to podsurvey.com/sticks and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you a little better. That way we can show advertisers just how great our listeners are. Even if you've taken a podcast listener survey before, this one is specific to our show. So we really need you to take it too. Plus, once you've completed the survey, you can enter to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Again, that is podsurvey.com/sticks. Thanks for your help.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks, presented by the Ford F-Series. DJ Bucky here, Sunday night, week 2. This is our second Sunday night episode here, recapping the day's action. Last week, Bucky, we had a great time. We got good feedback from everybody on social media on that kind of maiden voyage of a Sunday night podcast, and we're back at it for round number 2.
I know, excited for week 2. I thought we had a great slate of games. Obviously, we sat through 3.5 hours of games doing Game Day Live, and then I went and checked out the Rams, so it's been a pretty good football Sunday for me.
Yeah, you had to one-up me, man. 3.5 hours we do of a show. And then I'm tired, I'm beat, I'm ready to go home. And I look at you and I'm like, hey, Bucky, where you going? You're like, oh, I'm just going to hop on the train, go see the Redskins and the Rams.
Let's go. Let's go see it. See what Jerry Goff could do. See
heavy
what
lifting. Could do. Heavy lifting here for NFL media. Bucky Brooks. Love it.
It was fun.
He's not, he doesn't cheat the company here. No. Buck, I want to get to your takeaways there. We got our 10 takeaways. I'm going to spoiler alert. Number 3 on the takeaway list is your reaction to what you saw there with Rams and the Redskins. So we'll get to that in just a minute here. But let's get going here with our 10 takeaways. Let's start at number 1. And to me, kind of the one thing that jumped out to me today, I wrote down on the sheet here, balanced Broncos. You know, this is a big heavyweight fight between the Denver Broncos and the Dallas Cowboys. And I thought the thing that jumped out to me with this team was I thought, okay, they were able to run the ball. You see, CJ Anderson gets him 118 on the ground. They were physical up front with the Dallas Cowboys on both sides of the line of scrimmage. Simeon throws 4 touchdowns. He's put together 2 solid games now. And then Von Miller, he breaks that streak and not getting a sack, gets a couple sacks. You look at the corner play, all 3 of them played great. Talib and Harris, they each get an interception. And then on the receiver side of things, you've got Demaryius Thomas. And then you've also got, what's my guy's name?
Emmanuel Sanders.
Zeke Sanders.
Thank you, Emmanuel Sanders. They each had 6 catches. So just to me, it was just the balanced Broncos was what stood out to me about this team.
Trevor Siemian, 231 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. And we also highlighted.
I dropped the 4 touchdowns on that.
Oh, yeah. But
they're balanced.
But my main point is we broke down that Talib Harris versus the wide receivers and our preview VODs, and we did a really good job of highlighting how their ability to take on bigger wide receivers and be able to be versatile as well. So both sides of the ball versatile for the Broncos.
Yeah, I think the big thing in that game, like the Denver Broncos are very impressive. They're out to a 2-0 start. Trevor Siemian has played very, very well at the position. But when they've been able to get the contributions of the run game, we now know how important C.J. Anderson is to this offense. When you have a 100-yard game, they're able to balance it up. You see the ratio, 32 passes for Siemian, 25 runs for C.J. Anderson. This is the style of play that the Broncos want because it absolutely helps their defense kind of play the way that they want to play. Von Miller had 2 sacks. We've talked about Chris Harris and Aqib Talib being able to come up with turnovers. And so they played to script. I think the big thing that is telling when I look at the Dallas Cowboys, they certainly deviated away from the formula that has been so good to them since Dak Prescott and Zeke Elliott came on board. Their formula has always been run first team, a team that really leans on Zeke Elliott to kind of set the table. Dak Prescott kind of comes in, makes the plays that are there to be made in the passing game. 50 pass attempts for Dak Prescott is not a winning formula for the Dallas Cowboys. 9 rushing attempts for Zeke Elliott, they're not going to win a lot of games that way. They need to play keep away, preserve and protect the lead, and really help their defense. If they're going to make it where it's all about Dak, they're not going to win a lot of games.
And to me, when you slow down this Cowboy running game, you got to do it with one of 2 things. You got to do it with some pushback, or you got to do it with some penetration. And, you know, look, it's tough to get any kind of pushback against this Dallas offensive line. A lot of times, if you're going to disrupt them, it's going to be on quickness and penetration. But I thought they did a little bit of both. I thought they were able to get on the other side of the line of scrimmage, hold the point of attack. and then they won with quickness up front. So that Denver Broncos defense, hats off to them. They did a really nice job. And you're right, Bucky, the Cowboys, that's not their formula. Dak Prescott throwing the ball 50 times is going to be it's going to be tough for them, especially when you're going up against what I believe is the best group of corners, best trio of corners in the NFL. That's not going to end well.
No, it's absolutely not going to end well. Like, they cannot play a game that is so tilted towards the pass. They have to be able to balance it up. They have to lean on the running game. They have to shorten the game so their defense isn't exposed to an extraordinary number of snaps. And so they just got away from it. And I don't know why I went wayward, but we know now that Dallas cannot play a game that is so skewed heavily to the pass.
And by the way, these late night podcasts, I'm already at one name that's escaped me, and Emmanuel Sanders. I have three more names that will not compute in my brain at this hour. So just be ready for those.
Hey,
that are coming.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, no, that's why I need some backup here. Derek Carr, second point, second takeaway. I just wrote down Carr's cruising. I mean, look, the Jets, not a good football team. We all know that. But still, Derek Carr, I thought he was just accurate. He was efficient. He's dialed in, Buck. I saw him in the preseason against the Rams. I see a guy that's just comfortable. He's comfortable in the system. He's comfortable with his weapons. Man, it really dialed in with Crabtree today. He ended up getting a hat trick. But in a day where Amari Cooper wasn't much of a factor, still a dominating performance by Derek Carr, and seeing Marshawn Lynch dancing on the sidelines and having fun, it just there's a good vibe with the Oakland Raiders right now.
Oh, they absolutely are feeling themselves when it comes to the optimism that is surrounding this team. This is a team that absolutely feels like they can be one of the top teams, not only in the AFC, but they can compete as legitimate Super Bowl contenders. And when I look at this game and I watch Derek Carr really find his rhythm with Michael Crabtree, with Amari Cooper not really being a factor, it says a lot about the balance that they have. Marshawn Lynch gives them that identity that they want to have. Even though he had 12 carries and only 45 yards, the production from a yardage standpoint is inconsequential. It is the ability to have that rough and rugged running game that they need to lean on when they want to lean on it. I like this team. I think they play better defense than we anticipated, but as long as they can continue to really dominate the game from an offensive standpoint, they're going to have a chance to be one of the last teams standing at the end.
They got some work cut out for them now. Look, there's a big win over the Titans on the road. This Jets team, not very good, but they go at the Redskins in a primetime game next week. That's a Sunday night game, I believe, coming up. That's going to be a big one. And then you go after that at Broncos, Ravens at home, Chargers, Chiefs. So they've got a nice stretch here. If they can keep playing ball like this, they're in good shape. The AFC West as a bigger picture, Chargers sitting at 0-2. You look at the Raiders undefeated, the Chiefs undefeated, and the Broncos undefeated. So it's shaping up to be a powerful division, no doubt.
That is the Sunday night game, by the way.
That is the Sunday night game. It'll be interesting to watch how they continue to kind of get down, because the Oakland Raiders are certainly built the way that you want to see a team built. They can run the ball. They have the ability to kind of throw it all over the yard with the players on the outside. The biggest question mark is their defense. Can they stop legitimate teams? And so playing the Redskins on the road, that'll give the nation an opportunity to kind of see if they're up to par.
All right, let's stick with that team, though, the Washington Redskins, Buck, because this is our third takeaway, and I literally just wrote down on the paper, Ramskins, Bucky was there, so you have the floor.
You know, the funny thing in being there and watching the Rams and the Skins, I was impressed with parts of both teams. I continue to be impressed with the job that Sean McVay has done with Jared Goff, and even though Jared Goff is not a finished product at this point, he looks leaps and bounds better than he did last year in terms of the ball coming out, in terms of the plays that they're making in the passing game, in terms of his comfort level kind of directing the offense. I will say that when you watch the Rams play, what they've done is they've tried to kind of use tempo to keep Jared Goff comfortable. So there are some instances where if they connect on a big play, they're hurried to the line and continue to run out of that same personnel package, that same formation, and allow Jared Goff to kind of play at the line of scrimmage, because then he doesn't have to worry about new personnel, trying to decipher the looks. It allows him to play fast and decisive. They also do a great job of setting things up in play action. Ty Gurley had one of the more productive games that I've seen the last couple years. 16 carries, 88 rushing yards, caught the ball out the backfield, made some spectacular plays, so well over 100 scrimmage yards. This is the way that the Rams need to play. If not for a few mistakes, particularly one at the end where Goff threw an interception because he kind of stared down his look, I thought the Rams looked really, really good, and they have the potential, not necessarily be a playoff team, but I can see them winning 7 or 8 games in Sean McVay's first year.
Well, one of the things that just jumps out to me in this ballgame is that Kirk Cousins, since he's kind of taken over this starting role, he's thrown for a ton of yards. And one of the things that I've kind of wondered is, okay, now we lose some of these weapons with DeSean Jackson's gone, Pierre Garçon is gone. But this team really hadn't had much of a running game over the last couple of years. So really, since Alfred Morris has left, they haven't been a consistent rushing team. So to me, when you looked at them today, it was kind of a two-headed monster there, wasn't it, Buck? You got Fat Rob there, Rob Kelly,
yeah,
as well as Samaje Perine getting it done.
Absolutely. So Fat Rob goes out, and Thompson comes in, and Thompson actually had a great game. And the
I forgot about Chris Thompson.
Chris Thompson had it. I mean, he had a very, very productive game. He broke off a big run, scored a touchdown, caught a couple passes out of the backfield. But what I was impressed with was the diversity of the Redskins' attack. And I think the way they played today is the way that they have to play to make sure that Kirk Cousins is comfortable. You saw three different rushers have almost 70-plus yards. Kelly with 78, Thompson with 77, Perine with 67. Then you see the wide receiver core. Jordan Reed led the way with 48. Jameson Crowder had 47. But it was a very balanced attack. And so while we like to think about the Washington Redskins being explosive and up-tempo and dynamic, really what they are is a ball control offense that allows Kirk Cousins to be kind of that pass-first point guard. When they are playing and operating the way that they were operating today, they can be a very, very tough team to beat. It'll be interesting to see how they perform against the Oakland Raiders on Sunday night.
All right, let me hit you with this one question. Can the Rams get to 8 wins this year?
I think they can because within division, I think they can take 2 from the Niners. Then when you get to the Seahawks, they normally will split with the Seahawks because they kind of have that recipe. They understand how to beat them. I'm sure there are a couple other games on the schedule that they can kind of pick off a team or two. So, yeah, I'm going to say they can get to 8 wins.
Okay, that would be big. That would be a big step there for that organization. One of the things, though, you mentioned Jordan Reed, the leading receiver for the Redskins in this game, which is going to bring me to takeaway number 4, and that is Tom Brady being back and the New England Patriots exploding. We talked about it last week with them. Tom Brady throwing the ball down the field more than he ever had before. No Julian Edelman. They could not get in any kind of rhythm against the Kansas City Chiefs. And one of the reasons, everything was vertical. And Tom Brady's been at his best, really, kind of playing a horizontal game the last few years. So when I broke this thing down today, Buck, Brady's 30 of 39 for 447, 3 touches, right? Mm-hmm. 20 of his 30 completions this week went to either tight ends or running backs.
Really?
So that's what they had to do. That's what the Patriots do so well, though, is you realize, okay, we got a little bit deep ball happy here. Let's get our tight ends involved. Let's get our running backs in the ball. That helps Tom get the ball out of his hands quicker. It's going to protect him. It's going to give us some easy completions. And once he gets in that rhythm, as he did, they get rolling. And we talked about it on the show today. Tom Brady's going to find your weakness, and he's going to attack it. And in this game with the Saints, it was at the linebacker position, and they had a mark on somebody today.
Oh, man. They did.
Alex Anzalone.
They found Alex, and he was Waldo. And they went at him repeatedly. I think the big thing with the New England Patriots, and when you watch them traditionally in the past, that is where they've normally have commanded their mismatches, working running backs, working tight ends, trying to really understand that they have an advantage with their personnel on the perimeter at those positions over your linebackers and safeties. And so Tom Brady is the best at working a mismatch and really kind of skewing the playing field to his favor. I think they continue to do that. I think the big thing is, and maybe we were a little presumptuous that we thought that the Patriots would hit the ground running this year. I think as they continue to learn more about Brandon Cooks, more about Philip Dorsett, they will find a way to generate those big plays, be it off play action or spread teams. But I still believe that they're a team that can be feared because Tom Brady continues to be a guy that can play at the top of his game.
And then, look, Drew Brees ended up piling up a bunch of yards. But this football team, the Saints, is this a sneaky bad team?
Oh, they're bad. They can't play defense. You can't play defense.
And they haven't played defense in a long time.
And they traded, like they traded away their top weapon in Brandon Cooks in the perimeter. And I know I got some people today that kind of added me because I said that he is their most talented and he was their most explosive player. And they're like, oh, what about Mike Thomas? I mean, like, I get it. But he's not an explosive player. He's a possession receiver. He's a chain mover. He's a guy that can get it. But he's not going to break off these big plays that kind of change the way people use their coverage. And so We'll see, because for everything that Sean Payton is as a play caller and a play designer, I don't know from an evaluation standpoint if they've loaded this team up with enough weapons to allow them to be an explosive or dynamic offense, and we know that they can't play defense.
Look, I know he's got a Super Bowl ring there, no question. But
for sure,
it's not to the Jeff Fisher, you know, point where people are saying, wait, so he's making this much money and the reputation is as such. Where are the recent results?
I know.
It's not to the Jeff Fisher point, but it's starting to become a little bit of a talking point, I think, with the Saints year after year after year. It seems like they're just kind of stuck in a rut. That might be one of those deals might be the best thing for both parties, just get a change of scenery and get a fresh start somewhere. Again, that's, you know, self-admittedly an overreaction here 2 weeks into the season.
A little bit, but they're on two. They're on two. Yeah. So we know typically when it comes down to playoff odds and those things or whatever, like typically those things don't work if you get off to a slow start. And so they've gotten off to a slow start. We wonder how they're going to climb out of this division with Tampa Bay, Carolina, and Atlanta all playing well. I don't know where the wins come from. I just don't know where the wins are going to come for the New Orleans Saints.
I'm glad you mentioned something about that division, the NFC South, because our next two takeaways are inside that division. First off, the Sunday night game, Falcons and Green Bay Packers. For my takeaway, Buck, I just wrote down fast Falcons. I wrote down fastest team in the NFL, ? Especially on that turf. If they're not the fastest team in the NFL on both sides of the ball combined, the way they play, I'm talking about not just the speed of the players, but when they get their pace going as well, I don't know who's faster than they are.
You know, I don't know, but when I've talked to Thomas Dimitroff in the past about what they wanted, what they were looking for in their players, they say we want urgent athletes, dudes who have a competitive urgency, guys who play at a frenetic pace, and they certainly play fast at home. This is a team that is built for the turf. We talk about Vic Beasley, Tech McKinley, the guys that they've added on defense. They are a fast team on that side of the ball. And then on offense, I mean, they're just as fast. Julio Jones is explosive. Taylor Gabriel's explosive. The two running backs, Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman, they can create big plays in a number of ways. And so for the Atlanta Falcons, if the Atlanta Falcons are able to obtain home field advantage, it puts them a step above some of the other teams in the NFC because they are so fast, particularly when they're playing in the cozy confines of Mercedes-Benz.
That is dome sweet dome for those guys.
Oh, look at you. You've been so sitting fast on that. You wanted to get that out? You wanted to get the dome sweet dome?
Yes.
That's something you've been practicing?
That was my note I wrote down. Not Falcons, fast Falcons, alliteration from DJ, but dome sweet dome, more alliteration.
I'm big on alliteration this week, boys, as you're going to discover. Look. Somebody said to me, a scout said to me a long time ago when I was first starting out, you show me a slow team, I'll show you a bad team. Like, it really is true. You look at some of these teams that struggle year after year, a lot of times they're slow.
Even Hooper is fast, showing that he could take the distance last week.
Yeah, no question. So, and look at the secondary that they have and Keanu Neal dropping down. I mean, you look at Devondre Campbell and Deion Jones and Duke Riley. These guys can all fly.
Oh, for sure.
So I think it's the fastest team in the NFL. That's just my two cents there. But that's point number five. Let's get to number six here on the takeaway, Buck. Again, staying inside that division. I just wrote down, again, alliteration, Bucks are bullies. I mean, when you look at the Buccaneers, we talked about earlier today, we spent so much of the offseason, DeSean Jackson, O.J. Howard, and this offense and where they can go and what they can do. And maybe we didn't give enough respect to the defense that they've built there in Tampa Bay. And it sure was on display today against the Bears. A lot of 20 rushing yards. They generate 4 turnovers. That's a good-looking group.
Good-looking group. And I think we've had the added insight of being able to watch them on Hard Knocks. When you watch them on Hard Knocks and they gave us a kind of a behind-the-scenes peek at what they're able to do, they are a dynamic squad up front. Gerald McCoy, for one, I didn't know that he had that kind of first step quickness where he can absolutely change the game from inside. But then when you get to the linebackers, Levante David, those guys being able to run around and chase. And then you saw Noah Spence coming in kind of as that fastball pitcher that you always talk about and pass rushers coming off the edge. Their young cornerbacks, Vernon Hargraves. This is a team that really got better the last half of the year under Mike Smith. They continue to add pieces to that defensive puzzle. And I do believe they can go toe-to-toe with anybody in the NFC South. And I think it's going to be a tough battle to determine which team is actually on top, because all of these defenses, Carolina, Tampa, and Atlanta, are loaded with playmakers.
One of the things we discussed this a little bit earlier today. I thought it was interesting using DeSean Jackson a little bit inside. Thinking of DeSean Jackson, those big home run plays over the top. They got him in the slot a little bit and used him inside. People are going to have to respect that speed. You're going to get spaced. Did a nice job. I believe it was a nice little third down, just checked up inside. And Jameis was on the money. I thought Jameis was pretty sharp today. First rattle out of the box, 18 for 30, 204 yards, a touchdown. Not the sexiest of stat lines. But, man, they came out, pushed the ball aggressively down the field. Mike Evans and him, the chemistry is still very much in place despite missing a week last week.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with Jameis and what he was able to do. Got the ball out, took care of the ball, let his playmakers work. We saw the connection with him and Mike Evans. This is a team that is dynamic, and when you get Doug Martin back, if Doug Martin looks like he looked in Hard Knocks in terms of being in shape, being powerful and explosive, that balanced offense to go with a powerful defense, I kind of like it.
All right, one side note here. This isn't in the original takeaway, but I thought we have to discuss it. We mentioned the True Birds when we were watching this game. Not the Boo Birds, the True Birds.
Oh, yeah.
This game was on the road. If you're a Bears fan, the Trubisky chants, I'm sure, were taking place in a couple living rooms around the Midwest. But Mike Glennon, two interceptions, didn't take care of the ball inside the pocket. Was victimized by a lot of drop passes from this group, no lie. But
for sure,
overall, not a great performance for him. And it just brings up the question, how long are we going to wait before we see Mitchell Trubisky for the Chicago Bears?
I think if you're the Chicago Bears, you still have to be patient. But what is working against you? If you're the head coach is looking like, man, I need Mike Glennon to win games. But if I'm into trying to save my job, do I need to put the rookie out there and show some progress with the rookie and say, look, if I have a little more time, I can win games? I think it's tough. I think it's a tough situation for John Fox. I think it's a tough situation for Ryan Pace. I understand why they went all in terms of making sure that they really put enough options in the quarterback room to give them a chance. But I do believe if he continues to have performances like this and if they continue to lose, at some point they're going to have to turn to the rookie.
Well, I'm looking at, I believe it's week 8 at the Saints. I mean, they got some tough teams. You look at coming up, we mentioned it before, Steelers, Packers, Vikings, at Ravens, Panthers. That's their next slate of games. Not an easy opportunity for a rookie quarterback to jump in there. But then after that, you get to October 29th at the Saints. Even though it's on the road, I think that would be one I would keep my eye on. But, man, if they keep dropping games and the schedule is not kind, maybe they can't afford to wait that long, Buck. Like you said, maybe your head coach, you're going to feel the pressure. I got to do something to help myself here. I got to get this young kid ready.
Oh, for sure. I think they do have to do something to help themselves. They have to be a little more dynamic. They got to continue to feed Tariq Cohen, have to, kind of show their young people, their young players off and try and do it. But they're tough because out wide, at wide receiver, they don't have anybody that scares nothing.
No.
They don't have anything. So if you're a Bears team, you can hope you play good defense, hope you get in some games, hope you can catch some people napping. But I don't know where a lot of the dubs are going to come from. I just don't know.
Yeah, look, 16 carries for 20 yards in the run game. They need to get Kyle Long back as well, get him healthy. All right, takeaway number 7. Buck, we spent a lot of time talking about this game, watching this game earlier today. Kansas City and Philadelphia was a really entertaining game. But to me, the story of this game, both of these defensive lines, I think I feel pretty comfortable in saying top five defensive lines. You look at Kansas City and Philadelphia, and how about the young player for the Chiefs and Chris Jones and what he got done today?
Whew. Chris Jones played like a grown man inside. I do believe you. I think these are two very, very talented front sevens, talented D-lines. And, in fact, I would give the edge to Philadelphia when you look at the depth and diversity of their defensive line. From Fletcher Cox on the inside to the guys that they're rotating in, Brandon Graham, Chris Long plays. You have Derek Barnett. You have so many guys that can play and come in and contribute that you just don't see teams with the kind of wealth of riches at those positions. And then in Kansas City, they have dudes who can dial it up when it comes to rushing the passer. Dee Ford, Justin Houston, Tamba Ali, when he has an opportunity. But today we saw Chris Jones play like that. And look, you were a big Chris Jones fan when he came out of Mississippi State. I was a little hesitant in terms of putting a grade on him. But today he was a dominant player on the inside. If they get that kind of effort from him, that defense is going to be lights out, continue to be lights out.
Yeah, I don't know who had a bigger – more dominating effort this weekend, his Mississippi State Bulldogs over the LSU Bengal Tigers are
having
a
college on Tuesday.
I'm just teasing it.
I don't want to deviate to the college game much, but I will say this. Number 94 for Mississippi State, the defensive tackle.
Yeah.
Whoa. He popped. Yeah. He popped off the TV screen. I mean, it was only TV scouting, so I can't say anything. But one, DJ, in pregame, he challenged the LSU Tigers. He basically started a fight and started a brawl. And then when the game started,
he continued it.
He absolutely beat them.
He started the fight and finished the fight.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, that's a little teaser for those who are listening to this. If you're interested in college football, we got you covered with the Tuesday podcast. That's coming. Let's crank through the last three here. Cam, I wrote down Cam crushed. Told you, big on alliteration. Win for the Carolina Panthers. That's great and all. But Cam Newton, Bucky, he's getting destroyed back there. Sacked 6 times and hit a ton in this ball game. That's something that's got to change.
I mean, it's something that has to change, but I don't know how they change that equation because they don't have a very, very talented offensive line. And if they're unable to run the ball, then they can't slow down the pass rush with play action, and he's going to be susceptible to take those big hits. We can talk about Cam Newton, the runner. We can talk about all the things that they used to do with him, with the quarterback powers, quarterback design runs, the read option. But the biggest culprit in terms of his ability to get hit has been that offensive line. Matt Khalil, Ryan Khalil, those other guys up front, they have to do a good job of playing on the string, and they didn't play well against the Buffalo Bills. But I'm going to say this. I think the Buffalo Bills defense is a little salty. I think they're a little saltier under Sean McDermott. I think he's done a great job of simplifying things that allowed them to play fast. He and Leslie Frazier had a nice plan, and I figured Deshaun McDermott would have a nice plan because, look, he coached against Mike Shula and those guys for years on end, so he understands the weakness that they have, their deficiencies, where they're inept. And so I think he attacked those. But, yeah, Cam Newton has to get better play from the people in front of him or he's not going to make it the entire season.
Interesting thing about this Panthers team. Have you had to give up a touchdown? Give up 3 points? I know that's the Niners and the Bills, but giving up 3 points each of their first two games. But now as you look forward for them, Saints at Patriots at Lions, okay, we're about to find out if this Carolina team's for real.
Well, yeah, we are going to find up there for real. I know this. Their defense is for real. Steve Wilks, the new defense coordinator, has done a really good job. They're dialing up more pressure. They're coming after people. They're making it tough. What they have to get is they have to be comfortable winning ugly. But for them to win ugly, Christian McCaffrey and Jonathan Stewart have to be key contributors in the run game. They have to be able to run for 125 to 130 yards each week so they can control the tempo and allow that defense to go to work.
I'm looking at their at just this box score for the Buffalo Bills. Didn't have a completion over 15 yards in this game. Didn't have a run. Longest run was 13 yards, and that was by Tyrod Taylor. So this Carolina Panthers defense is 100% locked in right now. Speaking of defenses locked in, takeaway number 9, second week in a row. I don't care who the opponent is. Tip of the cap to the Baltimore Ravens and what they're doing defensively.
Hey, man, you know it better than I know it. You understand the Ravens' way and what they do. And writing about the Baltimore Ravens a couple weeks ago, they talked about wanting to get back to the Ravens' way, wanting to be a team that was led by the defense, fueled by the running game, and then they had efficient quarterback play. Well, that's what they're getting right now. 10 turnovers in 2 weeks, defense playing at a lights-out level, forcing the issue on defense, and really returning and reemerging as the bullies in the AFC. You know it. Y'all kind of lean on that when you were there. They kind of embraced that style of play. I think the Baltimore Ravens are a viable contender in the AFC, strictly on their defense and their ability to kind of hit you in the mouth.
Those safeties were flying around today, too. Eric Weddle had a pick. We highlighted them on Thursday, and they definitely won that battle.
Oh, yeah. Look, and on the flip side of that, as great as Baltimore's defense was, by the way, tip of the cap rookie, Tyus Bowser, big fan of him coming through the process, had a sack, had an interception. He was outstanding. But for the Browns, Kaiser, rough day at the office, 3 interceptions. I believe he had a fumble as well. Came out of the game, had a migraine issue, ended up coming back in. Looked like he was extremely frustrated with what was taking place in there. And, Buck, I'm going to throw this one out to you. And I'm just throwing a fact out there. It's just a number. There's no opinion associated with this number, but I'm just going to give you a number. Mm-hmm. Head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson, is 1-17.
That's tough.
It's not good.
In the Cleveland Browns' last 34 games, obviously this predates Hugh Jackson, the Browns are 4-30.
Gosh, that's a lot of losses, man.
Can't you accidentally, like, fall into a couple more wins than that?
I mean, I guess, but Here's the thing that I'll say about the Browns. They have lost a lot, but of late they've played a lot of close, well, competitive games where they've been in. But the league is set up to be a seven-point league, meaning that most games are come down between one score. They've settled in the final quarter.
But I'm saying, like,
I would think they would fall into those. And I think the big thing that is scary for Hugh and his coaching staff, they need to fall on some of those wins. Now I don't think the league certainly
like right now.
They didn't do them any favors. Playing Pittsburgh, playing Baltimore, I mean, I can think of easier ways to come out the gate. But we'll see. Maybe there's a soft spot in their schedule where they can start getting some wins. But, yeah, they got to kind of start putting together a winning effort to be able to get in the right part of the ledger.
Silver lining for Cleveland, David Njoku caught his first touchdown. That's good.
He did. He had a drop on a crosser earlier in the game, too, though, that was a little disappointing. So he's not a finished product, but – big fan of his athleticism, what he can do. I mean, look, it's a bummer for me, just no Myles Garrett. I mean, that's one of the things I was looking forward to seeing this season with the Browns, to see this defense fly around and see how Myles Garrett would fit in and kind of take off for this team. But it's been bad luck. Speaking of bad luck, the Ravens, big injury again. Man, they've been just crushed with injuries this year, and they're fighting through it. They're 2-0, but Marshall Yanda, who I think clearly their best offensive lineman, looks like he's going to be gone for the season, Bucky. That's a big blow.
Oh, that's a huge blow, because they were just beginning to play the style of play that they want to play. Everybody up front running the ball, being committed to trying to get 35 to 40 rushing attempts, doing the kind of things that offensive linemen love to do, which is knock people back, knock them off the line. And so to lose Marshall Young to one of the best guards in football certainly hurts their chances of being able to kind of control it as a run-first offense.
All right, my goal was to keep this thing under 30 minutes tonight. I think we got a good shot at it here. Tenth and final takeaway for me, Buck. I just wrote down Derrick Henry time, ? I think you even brought it up when we were doing the show earlier today. 14 carries, 92 yards and a touch. DeMarco Murray, 9 carries, 25 yards. Not much of a factor. Is it time to pass that thing?
Oh, it is time. Their last five games, Derrick Henry has more rushing yards, a better yards per attempt average, more rushing touchdowns. The only reason why DeMarco Murray is the starter is because he's respected as a veteran. He's done some good things for the Titans the last year and a half. But right now, the better player, the more feared player, is Derrick Henry. And so at some point, you'll see a passing of the torch, and he'll kind of take over as the number one running back for them.
Hey, by the way, did you hear that thud? That was the Jacksonville Jaguars landing back on Earth.
Man.
Oof. Man. Bortles did get him some garbage time. He got him some garbage time numbers.
It was good to see one team from Tennessee go down and win in Florida.
Again, Sully. Tuesday.
I know.
We're gonna
Tuesday.
Get some balls and that epic collapse. We're gonna get there.
Collapse. What epic collapse? What?
I don't know what football game you're talking about. Actually,
epic collapse. I mean, DJ, we have to at least talk a little bit about the Tennessee thing. No. Just a little bit.
I gotta sing a Disney song on Tuesday.
It will be
about
the
this too.
Last time.
Yes.
The last
yes,
time that to... I can that I can go all in on the Tennessee Vols.
The oh, last yeah. time? No.
Yeah, they cost me. They cost
oh,
me.
Oh, I know. I know. My reverse hijinks didn't work.
Save it, boys.
All right, we're saving it.
I think we're right at 30 or a little under 30. So any other nuggets you want to bounce in here that we've missed?
I had a couple.
Well, let's give Bucky the floor.
Bucky's got the floor, obviously.
But. Let's see. Did anything else stand out? I would tell you what stood out to me. The Seattle Seahawks. The Seattle Seahawks and Russell Wilson. They are a team that is going to have to win playing ugly because their offense up front is not good enough to score. And so their defense has to do everything. The fact that they won 12-9 against the Niners, and the Niners have played good defense the last 2 weeks. 23-3, they lost to the Carolina Panthers, and then they lose 12-9 today. So the defense has not been the issue. But for the Seattle Seahawks, they have to get more from their offense. If they're going to be a team that we really talk about being one of those at the end, their defense can't carry the load by this much. At some point, they have to be able to score more than 12 points.
That was one of my notes. I'm hitting the panic button.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm hitting the panic button on that offense.
Really? The panic button?
The panic button. Yeah. You can't – that defense is well on its way, as we know, the way John Lynch is drafted, but it's not mm-hmm. quite there yet to what he where he wants it to get. And 12 points against that team, no. That's not good.
Not good enough.
That's not good.
I mean, the Niners aren't sorry, though. The Niners have committed and invested a lot in their front line.
They have. They're not there yet, though. They're not there yet. That's still more than 12 points. And
Chris Carson had a nice
he
nice
did.
Day, though,
he did.
A
couple drop picks, though, from Russell as well. It's just not a good outing for them.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching that tape. I did not see much of that ball game, so I'll jump on that. All right, Sully, I'm going to give you a chance to get one more nugget
cool.
in.
Cool, so yeah. Tip of the cap to Gates and Thomas. A couple big milestones for those guys.
That's, oh, yeah.
I mean, you can tell what the milestones are?
Yeah. 10K plays for Joe Thomas, and then the tight end touchdown record for Gates. Good on both of those, those veterans.
On both of those. Let's see.
Anything? Sully, oh! Did I get us in? Did I get us in under 30?
You did.
We're pretty close.
You did.
Right
you
there.
Close.
We're right there.
Jacoby Brissett.
Bucky, you had a great read, by the way. Your read at the top of the show.
No. We don't want to make that my permanent job. I don't want to be permanent.
That was the first one. You kicked it off for us? Job.
As long as it's not the Me Undies thing, I'm good. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
As long as it's not
you.
That.
I hear you. Man. You knocked it out of the park, buddy. You did great.
That's good.
Look, that's going to do it for us. This is Move the Sticks. Presented by the Ford F-Series. This is the second edition of the Sunday Night Podcast. And I got to say, I thought it was a real humdinger. I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought this was a pretty good one.
And we're going to just keep it going. Keep it going this week. Tuesday is going to be great. Thursday video show. We're going to be throwing seven different kinds of smoke here at Move the Sticks.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, let's let Sully get back to crying in his sleep here with his volunteers, which we will touch on Tuesday's episode. We'll recap the college football weekend. And a lot of goodies coming your way this week on Move the Sticks, presented by the Ford F-Series. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.